Welcome back to Customers Who Click, the e-commerce podcast for D2C brands. In each episode, we will look to answer one important question. What is the one thing brands should be doing right now to get customers clicking? Each guest will take us through actionable insights and real-life examples from brands excelling in the art of customer attraction. So whether you're looking to enhance your conversion rates, boost average order values, or extend customer lifetime value, this is the podcast for you. Visit customerswhoclick.com for all our past episodes and to connect with us. Now dive into the world of D2C e-commerce with us and unravel the secrets to keeping those customers clicking. Today's guest is the brilliant Chloe Thomas, podcast host, author, and editor-in-chief of e-commerce tech. Chloe's known for her practical advice, insights into various aspects of e-commerce, including customer acquisition, retention, conversion optimization, and pretty much anything you'd want to hear about. So Chloe, welcome. Tell us, why e-commerce?
Why e-commerce? Well, I got into e-commerce 20 years ago this year. Anticipate big LinkedIn post coming up soon. But 20 years ago, and it was an escape strategy at the time. I was working for Barclays Bank,
right, okay,
doing direct mail and various types of consumer marketing, and I hated working for the bank, so I applied. Those who can remember back this far, I applied to everything in the back of Marketing Week magazine. And the first people to offer me a job were Past Times, the high street retailer, which your older listeners may remember. And they had web, catalog, and high street. So I was doing omnichannel back in the early 2000s. As to why I stuck around, because I firmly believe, I frequently talk about this with anyone I'm talking to in e-commerce, is once you've got the e-commerce bug, the seeing the traffic turn into money, which is so much more exciting than lead gen, then you can't leave. It's really hard to leave once you've experienced that. So that's why I'm still in e-commerce 20 years later.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Some of the first companies I worked with were, well, the first one was basically lead gen for us because it was a voucher affiliate website. So all we needed to do was acquire customers. And then our conversion was getting them to click on a voucher code. It's not incredibly exciting because you don't get that, oh, brilliant, we've made some sales. We just get, we got a load of clicks. And then, did some kind of lead gen account-based stuff. But it's just not quite as fun as just seeing those conversions come in every day, that actual money just appearing and being able to look at exactly what people are doing and why they're doing it. So, Chloe, what do you think is the one thing brands should be doing right now or in 2024 to get customers clicking?
This is going to sound a bit vague, everybody, so bear with me. I think you should keep optimizing, which is my personal mantra, but is also what you really need to do in a year like this one, where, as we all know, competition is now up in the e-commerce space. The land grab is over. We've got to evolve and grow up as our industry does, which means we've got to be better marketers, basically. And what do better marketers do? They keep optimizing. And it's not just do it once, it's do it multiple times. Optimization is never once and done, and it counts across the whole business. Should we be doing email? Should we be doing affiliates? Should we be doing Facebook ads, pay-per-click, TikTok, any of those things? Or should we be focusing on conversion rate optimization? Should we be fixing our returns policy? Should we be changing courier? You have to, from the highest level of the business down to the most minute detail, you've got to keep looking at what the best thing you could improve is and what the best thing you could stop doing is. And that, as annoying an answer as it is, everybody, is what you should be doing in 2024 to keep customers clicking.
Amazing. I think there's probably nothing in the business that's exempt from this,
nothing,
right?
Nothing at all. We've just, in my business, we've just been through a big process of optimizing our banking, which is truly tedious, trust me, okay, truly tedious, but has made us considerably more sustainable as a business because we were banking with the big bad Barclays, and has also made our banking cost less. So it's become more efficient. Yeah. It's become easier to manage. We are paying less fees and earning more interest, and we're no longer contributing massively to global warming with our banking. So yeah, literally, even the most dull thing can be optimized.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the way I like to look at it for our business is, if I can save, because sometimes you look at it and you're like, oh, it's £15. Does it really matter? But the way I look at it is, well, if I save that £15 there, that's my Zoom account paid for. So that's now free, in a way. And kind of applying that to different things and say, well, if I can save just a little bit of money here or cut this cost, it's paid for this, which means any additional income that we get is now, you know, available to spend on other things. Speaking of,
I was going to say, and it's also time and energy or fun. It's like my team are currently desperate for me to optimize something because it's driving them mad every time they have to do something with this particular piece of technology. And I know what we want to do, but it's a big, complicated rebuild process and just finding the time to focus on it. But it is going to happen in Q2, or I may get lynched by my team. But I'm so much looking forward to my team being happier because then they'll do a better job. So there's so many different elements to it. But yeah, I totally agree. A £15 saving is worth doing.
Yeah, we're always looking at, which is probably the same as almost every agency out there. What tool are we using to just manage everything internally? Where should our processes be? Where do we do client work? All these sorts of things. And we tested out a few and we're currently in 4 places, which is not ideal. But it's just such a big project, right? And it's kind of working for now, but it's such a big project and it takes time to work things out and how it's all going to fit into one tool. And then there's obviously that fear that if the one tool is wrong or bad, you kind of have to do it again. But speaking of tech, I definitely see this as a big opportunity for brands to optimize, not just from a financial point of view, but also their website experiences. So yeah, do you want to talk to us? Well, and obviously you acquired e-commerce tech a little while ago. So yeah, do you want to talk to us a bit about tech optimization?
Yeah, so I think this is one of those areas of optimization that gets ignored. It's like, well, we're doing email or we're doing that. And you think about the marketing tools, you think about the traffic that's flowing through the website and how you're optimizing that. You might think about optimizing your products, but very rarely do people think about optimizing the tech stack apart from the website moving, replatforming or something, which is like the hardest optimization, the most finger in the air praying optimization you can ever do. So for me, tech stack optimization, it's not about making a big, massive shift. It's about regularly looking at what tech you've got and what functionality it's got, because that is changing all the time. The number of businesses who have technology which can solve one of their problems that they just haven't realized because they didn't read the email is crazy. So look at what your tech's actually evolving to, and then look at what your current challenges and opportunities are and see how you can match those up. So first and foremost, tech stack optimization is about looking at what you're already paying for and seeing how you can get it to do more for you, which may mean actually you go, oh, we don't really need that anymore. So you may be able to cancel it, but it's about making sure you're using your tech really well, first and foremost.
Yeah, absolutely. With all the platforms developing quite quickly now, I feel there's product releases all the time for a lot of the major e-commerce tech. So making sure that you're not paying for 2 or more tools that are basically just doing the same thing. Can you consolidate to one?
There's so much development in the space at the moment, so much new stuff coming in. And obviously AI is big news. And to be honest, my best tip, my best advice around AI is look at what your existing tools are doing and use the AI they're giving you rather than going out and buying completely new AI for the sake of AI, because often it's much better tried and tested. So I think that's tantamount to keep an eye on what your existing tool set's doing.
Yeah, the AI has been trained on the customer service platform, so it knows how to do certain things within there. If you then just sign up for ChatGPT and start pulling stuff out of customer service, putting it there and asking for analysis, you're going to get some pretty generic stuff.
Let's not, we probably shouldn't go down that tangent, but if Google can get it massively wrong with Gemini, any of us can get it massively wrong. So yeah.
Yeah. One thing you mentioned at the start was, well, generally looking at optimization, and the website's one you mentioned is obviously it's a big project that people do. People like to redesign their websites, sometimes re-platform. But I think what's interesting is with the rest of the tech, generally people start to consider their options and consider moves when they come across a pain point with that tech and they start to get frustrated with it, but that's the only thing. And then they're having that negative opinion and experience with that tool. And it's almost like they've made the decision to leave and now they're just evaluating options. Whereas if they were just doing a regular kind of check-in every now and again, they would, at a different time, they might decide, well, actually, it makes sense for us to move. And we should be moving now because it's cheaper or more efficient. Or they might just realize that they, like I said, with AI, they've not uncovered the AI functionality in that tool. And actually, if they just switch that on, suddenly this tool becomes so much more valuable to them. It might have added some new products that mean that, again, it becomes more valuable and more
useful.
There's
two contrasting examples that go in opposite directions based on what you were just saying. One is the analytics space, which has gone mad in terms of content and what's available and all the rest of it, which I'm pretty certain is like at least 50% down to everyone going, Google went weird. So Google Analytics went weird. So so they hit that pain point, as you were saying. So they go, yeah, there's a whole amazing world of tech out here that can actually supply me better what I need, because people actually bothered to look at it and work out, what do we actually need? What should we go to? So I think that's the analytics situation is a really good example of how everybody went along and suddenly went, ooh, pain, and then bothered to suddenly discover there were better solutions out there. And then
and are now willing to pay for a tool which probably gives them very similar information to GA4 in a lot of cases, but they just can't be bothered to work out how GA4 is going to give it to them, because it is now quite a custom platform.
And really, then the flip side of that is there's hugely exciting things going on in the product and inventory management space in tech at the moment. Finally, the world of merchandising is leaving the spreadsheet. You've got to whisper that. You can't say it too loudly or people start getting scared. But that is where the clever brands are on the front foot. They've seen what's going on in the industry. They're going, oh, that whole inventory maneuver is very interesting. Let's see if that could help us, if this tech could help us. And they're getting on the front foot and therefore taking a big leap ahead of their competition, because they're suddenly actually in control. And they've got a system where they don't have the gatekeeper, the only one person who has access to the data, who occasionally manages to find the time to give it to marketing. They've now got a system that everyone can plug into that improves everything. And I think part of tech stack optimization is keeping your eyes open to what's available in the marketplace. As I'm sure, well, you've been to the big events, the e-commerce expos, the IRXs, the retail tech shows, where you're there and you see the brands coming in and their head down. They zoom into a session, they zoom into another session, and they never just meander around the stands to see what's available. And I think that is such a critical thing to do, because you don't, in tech especially, you don't know what you don't know. So you've got to kind of go and be willing to invest a bit of time and effort in discovery, accidental discovery of things.
Do you think, this is probably a completely separate conversation, really. Do you think part of the issue might be the way the tech partners approach those situations?
Yes.
Is there that anxiety from the brand that they're going to get sucked into a conversation that is really difficult to leave, and they're just being like pitched to? And I mean, I've seen it happen. I've been there as the prospect. You don't even get a chance to talk. You're just being talked at. So why would you want to go and speak to those?
I know it's really tough. And I see the pain on both sides of the fence with this, because I think there's huge amounts of money get invested in these shows. And especially if you're small tech, this might be your biggest marketing role of the year. So you're sat there quite nervously going, we've got to get some leads. We've got to get some leads, and pouncing on whoever comes past. And actually, that's completely understandable, because you go zap crazy, grab everyone's zap and all the rest of it. But I think there's also, I totally get why brands will turn their name badge around the wrong way. I mean, I'm usually walking around these with a speaker badge that says Chloe Thomas, podcast host, e-commerce master plan, right? Is pretty vague. It doesn't scream, I work for Marks and Spencers or something. But still, I'll get approached in that way by people who will go, try and hook me in. And I'm like, I'm really not relevant to you. Really not relevant to you. So I think I totally get that brands might be a bit nervous about it. But I think sometimes you practice some polite ways of saying go away in advance is probably the best advice.
So we don't have to go into specifics of the tech. That's not the purpose of today. But which areas have you seen make the most impact for brands? Like which kind of like tech categories, I suppose, so have you seen have the biggest impact for brands in the last couple of years?
In terms of money saving, money making, time saving, overall impact would be the inventory side of things. As I mentioned earlier, you can make some crazy quick shifts with the right software helping you plan and buy and merchandise your business. That would be one. I think anyone who doesn't have some kind of automated personalization activity going on the website at the moment is, even if you've only got one SKU, is clearly missing a trick. Now, what they're calling that could be very, there are some very bizarre words being used to describe this sort of thing at the moment, but something that uses machine learning or AI to better put the right things in front of the customers, basically, is what I'm talking about. I think that's a bit of a no-brainer. Yeah. The weird one, we've just done a survey of the e-commerce tech audience because I bought the business last year and I wanted to understand more about them. And one of the questions I asked was, which of these types of tech are you planning on shifting in the next year? Pretty obvious question to ask. 50% of respondents are thinking of moving their email marketing package, which I put up there as being as nerve-wracking as moving website from the data protection and the rebuilding.
Oh, yeah, that's...
And that's not quite as big a project, but definitely as nerve-wracking. But yeah, that's the most popular thing amongst that audience, which I find I really want to unpick that because I thought this was quite a solid space. So yes.
And just to confirm, this is brands responding to it and saying they're considering moving their email setup.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's just, is it seen as a bit of a commodity space now? And is the view that all these platforms basically do the same thing? The difference is our emails and our content. So if the price goes up on one platform, or if we think we're better off with a different pricing model, is that just the most important thing? And they're just looking at cost
saving. Yeah, I think possibly you're completely right on that one. I'm also thinking the marketer in me is going, is this something they're thinking about, but they never actually do? So I'm really tempted to go back to the same people in 12 months' time and go, did you? Did you move? Because it might be a say that never turns into a do. But that one got me. I haven't fully analysed all the results yet, but that one was flashing at me from the results going, whoa.
Yeah. Now that you mention it, I've heard a lot of talk about, I won't say names on this one for now, but moving from one big email platform to another, I think fairly big one, but just seems to be on the rise. And there's lots of talk. And I've heard some agencies talking about it and saying, agencies who used to specialize in one now saying, well, we're going to open up to this other platform.
Yeah.
So either that platform is doing something incredibly well, or the other major platform is letting things slip.
I do wonder, again, I'm not going to mention any names, but I do wonder if this is partly driven by the content being put out by our supplier side and content people, in that there's new shiny objects that can be talked about that might diversify the space. Yeah. Or it could be a similar scenario to, so we had kind of Shopify ruling the roost in Webland for what, about 5-6 years? And you had agencies who you never thought would sell anything but. And then some alternatives came into the space, started playing a good game, and then the diversification happened. So maybe email is reaching, the email industry is going through that same kind of product lifestyle curve, that it's reached the point where actually there is now diversification to be had, maybe. We're getting quite theoretical though.
The other platforms are catching up. There's less uniqueness of it. Also, I mean, it doesn't help with Shopify raising their prices. What was it, 25% or something? About 25%. That's obviously one. But this is, again, like you mentioned, that questionnaire. This is one where it's, well, are people actually going to switch because of this? Or are they just having a moan about it because it's a big price lift? 25%, what was it, $500, pretty much, isn't it?
Yeah.
Increase. Like that, yeah. Is that a big enough reason to re-platform your entire business, reintegrate all your tech and that entire setup? That's a big decision.
Yeah, this is where we come back to your point earlier, Will, about not waiting for the pain point, but being in a situation where every 6 months, every 3 months, you review your tech and you go, where are our problems? Where should we be putting our tech amending energy and time, and making decisions based on that? Because then if a price increase comes down, you go, okay, well, we're just going to weather that because 3 weeks ago we did our review and we know we're still on the right place. So it's worth us spending that extra to stay there, and we'll assume they're going to give us more for it. It's like the best example I've ever come across of this was I interviewed the founder of Thinkific, the courses platform, a couple of years ago. And they have a moratorium on staff being able to sign up to any tech they like, or they did at the time. And then any with the company will pay for the fees and all the rest of it. And then every 3 months, they go through everything the company's paying for and cull it. And he said they were culling over 10 grand a month of fees. So it's quite an extreme example of tech stack optimization.
It's quite an interesting approach. I mean, let's try everything. And then every now and again, let's just make sure we're only paying for what's working. I don't know how big their company is in terms of staff, but you know, that could get quite mental.
But it does give your team the freedom to try things out. And I think a version of that to be that we talked about website moves a lot and I think the clever website move these days is not a website move. It's a phased website optimization approach where you don't redesign, you just shift tech and then you start redesigning based on the data, or you do this bit and then you do that bit and you do the other. And I think we could take a similar approach to our tech changes, which is we test something and it gets X number of months and then we know we're going to quit it if it doesn't work. So I think one of the reasons tech stacks have become so bloated is because we've gone, we're going to commit 100% to this. We've never tried it. We've never tested it. We'll just put it in and then it's going to live there forever. So I think that comes into it as well as your testing program, as well as optimizing what you've already got.
Yeah, well, I think quite a few suppliers use quite long contracts as well. And that's either going to scare people off because they say, well, I'm not going to sign a 2-year contract if we don't know what this is going to do for us. And then some brands might say, yeah, no, I think this is going to work. They get convinced, they sign up and then don't fully get the value from it. So I think, maybe it's probably going to have to be pushed by the brands, really. Maybe a model where the standard becomes a 3-month trial. Or it would depend on the tech, I imagine. But a 3-month trial, and then you can either walk away or sign a long-term contract.
Some of the newer tech do free of charge proof of concept, which I think is quite if you can manage to do it in your sales pipeline, is a super cool way of recruiting customers. Obviously, they only do it for the right targets, but they'll put their entire, one kind of site personalization, optimization, merchandising thing. Again, there's all the potential words you could describe that sector with. They do a free proof of concept where they install their entire software on your site, run it for, I think it's 30 days. So it learns and it starts to optimize things. And so they can track what's been impacted by them, what hasn't, to then give you this is what it's worth. This is what our cost to you would be. So I think they do the proposal based on what they learn during the 30 days. So it's fair and attractive. And then off you go, which very clever.
Yeah. That's pretty good, isn't it? Yeah. I was speaking to, I think it was an analytics brand, who have a free trial. So you get, it's either 7 or 14 days when you sign up, but they will assign someone to look at your analytics and help you set up some of the reports and help you understand it. So at the end of that 14 days, you do feel like you're getting some value from it and it's useful. You know, the worst thing you see, you can see is a 30-day free trial and someone signs up because they've come across it, and they make a bit of an impulse sign up and then never actually integrate, or they integrate and then don't set up any reports or anything. And at the end of that 30 days, they go, oh, do you know what? We didn't find this useful.
It's because they did nothing with it.
But their view is we've had this for 30 days. We haven't done anything with it. We haven't found it useful. So we'll cancel. And then obviously the next time they get in touch, they have to say, do you mind if we actually have a free trial of this because we didn't use it last time?
Yeah, I think if you think about the buying cycle of an e-commerce brand, right, they're not every day of the week going, oh, we might do this, we might do another thing. We're not every week of the year are they in tech buying mode, but yet we're marketing every week of the year. And I sometimes do wonder if the 7-day, 14-day trial is the big beacon offer is actually a good way of getting the larger, more serious brands involved, because they've got a whole evaluation process to go through before they want to log in, before they want the clock to start ticking on that. And they're not actually they want in the sales process to properly see it, properly understand what it's going to do. But the clicking around, trying to set it up yourself is not necessarily relevant to them. So I often wonder that if maybe we should do a voucher for a 30-day free trial or a voucher for a 14-day free trial. So you can secure it and then deploy it at the time of your choosing. And then you'd have people taking action and then committing at the point in time where they had a week to properly test the software or a fortnight. Because I can imagine some brands, even if they've got, like the example you were saying, someone there ready to help them, they're still not in a place where they want to actually, however good the person who's helping you is, you still have to give them something, even if it's only an hour of your time, to actually make use of it.
That's an interesting idea. So there was an app a client was using that they exceeded their allowance for. So the dashboard basically goes, well, it kind of locks you out. It still runs. Actually, no, sorry, it doesn't run because they've exceeded their credits. The account's still there, but every time you go into it, it just shows you the upgrade page. It says, can you upgrade to the next plan or you can wait until it renews? Maybe a similar thing where you can sign up for the app, you can install it, integrate it so that data starts flowing, and there's just a blank screen for you which says, click here when you're ready to start your free trial.
Exactly. It's like I've just been through that same ceiling reaching thing with our Google Docs account. So I was transferring an awfully large number of videos from one Google account to another, which in fact I was transferring about 500 gig of stuff to it and then onto Dropbox. Very long-winded, boring process. Anyone who's doing it, get in contact. I will tell you how to massively free up your time when you're doing it because I found some brilliant tools. But I was doing that and our Google account, Google Drive, is only 150 gig. So I'm now very familiar with what happens when you reach the ceiling on Google, which if you reach the ceiling on Google Drive, they send you lots of warning messages, but you've got 14 days to fix the problem or upgrade. So they don't do the whole, screw you, you're not allowed to do anything. Everything continues to function. You can keep piling the gigabytes in, but you've got 14 days. I suspect if you left it above, you'd be getting increasingly urgent messages going, upgrade or die. Yeah. But I think that generally is a much better process to do than just slapping someone on the wrist. Because 9 times out of 10 in e-commerce, if someone's going above their limits, that's good news for you as a software provider. So you don't want to turn that into a big old negative. You want to turn that into a, have a chat with our team about how we can up your limits, have a chat with your team about how you can stay under limit. There's more sales opportunity than just going, go away until you give us a credit card.
Yeah. Well, just a per usage charge. Or you just say, you know, you've got 7 days grace period or whatever. I know some platforms that are based on the amount of data will say, well, we'll base the charge on your last 3 months data. So it's not constantly changing. If you have Black Friday and everything goes insane, they don't suddenly start charging you loads of cash.
Valentine's and Mother's Day extra. Managed to be in the same time frame or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Cool. Well, just before we finish up, what is the biggest mistake from your career?
Well, I've made plenty of tech mistakes, but I'm going to give you the absolute biggest, which isn't a tech mistake. It was a hiring mistake. Back when I was running a marketing agency, I was trying to get myself out of client stuff and I thought I needed to hire a brilliant account manager. So I got a recruitment agency on board and I hired someone via them who in my gut I knew from day one was awful and should be got rid of. Okay. But I convinced myself it was me that was the problem and that I just couldn't manage them well. So I continued with this for about 6 months until about a week after the point at which I could have got the feedback from the recruitment agency. Well done, Chloe. And then I fired them. And the cost of the lawyers, the cost of the recruitment agency, the cost of the salary to that person was somewhere in the region of £30,000-£35,000. So that was a bit of a bad one. And the day...
And how long were they there for?
Just over 6 months. Yeah.
Okay.
And when I walked into the office after they left the last time, the team pretty much all individually over the course of that afternoon grabbed me by the kettle or someone went, I'm really glad you've got rid of them. So I was like, brilliant. My gut was right. Should have asked my team. could have sorted this all out, all this pain out, a good 3 months earlier. And then I'd paid lawyers through the nose to do all the paperwork for me, to do this by the book and all the rest of it. And I think the following week, I was at a networking event. I met an HR consultant who would have charged me about a tenth of what the lawyers charged me and would have been more useful than the lawyers. So, yeah, it was all really bad timing. And really, at a time I really didn't have 30-odd grand to give away to the wrong person. So, yeah, probably the biggest. Probably.
It's, yeah, that's quite a quite expensive one. I mean, not... I've heard of, like, mistakes that are, you know, sound disastrous for companies. And obviously, like you said, you didn't want to kind of throw away 30 grand. But yeah, no, hiring. Yeah, it's one that pops up a lot, isn't it?
Yeah.
I hear hire fast, fire fast.
Yes. I forgot the second part.
I think maybe take a little bit of time. Yeah, I still think maybe take a little bit of time over the hiring. But yeah, be prepared to move people on.
Yes.
Well, amazing. Thank you so much, Chloe. If anyone wants to reach out and find out more from you, what's the best way to do that?
Thank you, Will. So I'm very easy to find on LinkedIn. Just search for Chloe Thomas and you'll undoubtedly find me. Add the word e-commerce if you can't, and then you definitely will find me. And probably the best place to find out what I'm up to other than LinkedIn would be the E-commerce Master Plan podcast, which is my number one podcast that's been going since 2015. So yeah, that's where all the grey hairs come from. Those of you who can see me on the video.
So how many episodes is that on
we
now?
We are on 400 and something. So we hit episode number 500 this year, which is kind of cool.
Okay. I've got a little way to go. I've got episode, well, when this goes out, episode 200 will have been.
What are you doing to celebrate episode 200? Have you decided yet?
I don't know how to describe it because it's happened, but I am episode 200.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's going to be about the podcast.
Awesome. Great. I think we've done it. We did one of those once and it was a very good episode. So yeah, nice use of episode 200.
Yeah. I've got an amazing host. It's Nathan Lomax from Quickfire. He's going to host it and we're going to talk about the podcast, which has happened if you're listening to this. So go back and listen to it. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. So we record it on Friday. So 2 days from when we're recording this.
Very cool.
Amazing. All right. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening. That's all we have time for today. If you have any questions or would like to add to today's conversation, join me here on the podcast, sponsor the show, or work with me, simply email will@customerswhoclick.com, visit our website, customerswhoclick.com, or connect with me, Will Lawrenson, on LinkedIn. But until next time, keep those customers clicking.